This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
To learn more about how to critically engage and understand Western political philosophy and its attendant political and ethical systems, courses are available by the Quran Institute, which can be accessed via the link.
I'd say that Islam actually manages plurality better than liberalism. For those who don't believe in the Islamic purpose of life, Islamic law, while it might underpin the security of the lands and the state and hence will prevent robbers and invading armies and things like that, it's not there to make Jews, Christians and Zoroastrians and others better Muslims because they're not Muslim. So in Islam, Christians and Jews could actually have their own law courts. In some cases, even their own police and semi-autonomous areas. No one was telling them that they're against they are not following the values of the state or they're not integrating or assimilating into the wider society. There was no such challenges. In liberal societies, however, the idea of a one law for all sounds very laudable at first. But when you actually think about it, how you apply this, you're basically saying that one law might be determined by the majority, let's say, or at least representatives of the majority, will basically impose one particular law system on everyone, including the minorities that might disagree with the law system. And basically that can involve a form of intolerance. Where communities are told that you can't do these certain practices because it doesn't conform with the law of this country, or you're not allowed to have your own law system because that is in derogation of this one law for all. What you find is that Muslims and historically Jews, but sometimes also Catholics, their own law systems were viewed as active threats to the state. Right now, it's Muslims a practice of just even voluntary Islamic law courts, or more like tribunals. They're not really Islamic, they're not courts really, but they're just tribunals, are viewed as a threat to the state, and the state now, state must clamp down upon these or regulate it or get involved in their religious life and affairs because it is viewed as a threat. So those are the issues that liberalism has a problem with: tolerance of multiple ways of life other than its own, I'd say in practice, whereas Islam actually allows separate law systems for Jews and Christians and others to practice their own laws amongst themselves. Islam kind of offers more tolerance than liberalism, only because Islam doesn't view itself, it can't view itself as imposing itself on everybody, because the purpose in life is to voluntarily choose to worship the Creator, to recognize His existence, and to follow His commands. It must be done voluntarily, it can't be done by imposition. Whereas liberalism believes that liberalism itself is universal justice for mankind. And so if it's universal justice for mankind, then every human on this earth has a right to liberalism, whether they like it or not. And so it means that there can only be one law for all in every liberal state. But it can also mean that liberal states can exercise colonialism, as it's called, to export its ideology to the world, because it believes that every human being has a right to what it calls its own definition of human rights, irrespective of whether those people like it or not, or agree with it, or accept it, and so on and so forth. Colonialism was justified from a liberal rubric.
I mean, I think that there are a few things to keep separate in the discussion. One thing is about the distinction about the laws that you apply within a state and what you think governs the behaviour of states. And liberalism was a doctrine about what happens within a state. It wasn't a doctrine that spoke to relationships between states. There are kind of very obvious differences here, because within a state, you've got a government, all the citizens are subject to the government. The nations are not subject to any kind of ruler. And so you shouldn't be thinking, as you very quickly said, that liberal theory was used to justify colonialism. That's actually, I think, not true.
You said that liberal theory was never used to justify colonialism because states in their international relations were not subject or beholden to laws, whereas domestically they're beholden to their own laws. I think I would disagree. John Stuart Mill, he wrote many tracts about how colonialism can be justified and why it's a good thing, and what should be the policy of liberal states concerning foreign relations with quote-unquote barbaric nations. Eventually, they will have to be subdued and they will have to be controlled with an iron fist until they are able, if they adopt liberalism, then they can be independent and autonomous and they've reached maturity. Now, the thing is this, that when any state goes to war, the state has to explain to its people why it's going to war. It can't just say, hey, we're going for money, we're going for wealth or fame. The people just wouldn't accept, especially in representative systems whereby, you know, political parties want to get re-elected. So they make excuses or that they have to give some justification that the people will accept at the very least, whether it be civilizing the natives. We're doing it for their own good. We're educating them for their own good. We have to go over there and give them superior enlightened values. So liberal theory has been used to justify colonialism very much so. Tocqueville discusses this as well as many others. So I would very much disagree that liberal theory has not been used to justify colonialism. Indeed, it was centrally located in justifying colonialism because the people wouldn't accept any other reason why you're going around the world and sending British troops to die for what purpose.
Graham, what do you make of that?
One thing is to distinguish between liberal theory, what the theory says, and what liberal theorists have said when they're speaking about other matters. And when it comes to the question, I mean, when I said, look, liberal theory is a theory about the state, it's not a theory about international affairs, and you started talking about what some liberal theorists said about international affairs, that doesn't mean that what they were giving you was some consequences of liberal theory. They were just giving their independent views about how they thought international affairs should go. And that's just got no consequences for liberal theory as a theory of the running of the state. There's another thing is that liberalism, like Islam, has a very long history. And you have to draw a distinction. One distinction is between theory and practice, what the theory tells you. Another thing is, and this is another point about history, that certainly with liberalism, there's a development over time and the theory improves. And there are ideas that were had by the founding fathers, people like Hume and Locke and Kant, that have been disavowed by subsequent generations of liberals, and you can't prove anything by appealing to things that they said.
The professor says aptly that there's liberal theory and there's liberal theorists. And so just because one of the founding fathers of America might have slaves, it doesn't mean that liberalism believes in slavery, which I totally would concur with him on that. But then this brings us to the fundamental problem of actual liberalism itself. What is the holy book of liberalism? The text that we can refer to that limits the amount of interpretation that can come from liberalism, sets a parameters to it. Well, there isn't any. So then what then makes something liberal? What is liberal theory? It's not a Platonic form that floats around that we can access and refer to. But liberal theory is anything that liberals say it is my point. And when I was talking about people, liberal theorists advocating colonialism or what have you, it wasn't perhaps them just saying, I think colonialism is a good idea. They wrote detailed tracts relating their own thinking, the thinking in their own books. And in fact, On Liberty, the classical book by John Stuart Mill, talks about imperialism and colonialism and justifies it in his own book On Liberty, which is viewed as a great reference for classical liberals, but for social liberals mostly, right? As in, we're under social liberalism today as the most dominant form of liberalism. Today, we know this as liberal interventionism of a different kind. So spreading democracy is also a key argument, or spreading freedom was also used to justify the war in Afghanistan. You could also want to read other books by John Stuart Mill, like On the Treatment of Barbarous Nations. He discussed that in a bit more depth, but you can see his justification for colonialism and imperialism in his book On Liberty, which is a very seminal book of political philosophy by John Stuart Mill. If ever you're going to study the political philosophy of John Stuart Mill, upon which much of the current day modern liberalism or social liberalism is, or at least from the Anglo-Saxon perspective, is certainly based upon, On Liberty is the most preeminent book of his. There is no separation between liberal theory and liberal theorists. If the liberal theorist is making a politically philosophical argument about something related to their other ideas, then it's part of liberal theory, I would say. There is no holy book. of liberalism, which is why you'd probably get more diversity in interpretation and hence more lack of clarity in political philosophy than one where you have a holy book which at least limits the amount of possible interpretations that one can produce. As to the praxis of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam's sayings to the actions of Muslims, we can make a quite definitive border between those two things. We can certain circumscribe that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is, as we believe, is a prophet. His sayings are the basis of our ethics, of our law, but Muslim activities or actions are not and can never be. And so if the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said it, if the Quran says something, it has absolute authority from our perspective and overrides anything else that we might want to bring later on. And I think that is a good thing. Having laws and ideas founded upon immovable and immutable bases prevents people from abrogating these ideas later in a civilization.
I guess Abdullah is making the claim that there's a centrality that the Islamic tradition has that we can sort of put a discrete boundary out around, right? Say this is within the tradition, this is not, this is history, history is not legal precedence, this is legal precedence is in, let's say, the form of the Habs or the whatever jurisprudence that we have. And that perhaps liberalism, and this is one of the questions that was asked, is it true then that liberalism fails to have this first principles approach of creating a boundary by which it defines what is and isn't liberalism, and in failing to do so, carves open the space for, I guess, projects like the colonial project, which was to enlighten the rest of the world with a very Eurocentric vision of what it means to be the good?
Okay, so there's a few things I wanted to respond to. And if I...
To learn more about how to critically engage and understand Western political philosophy and its attendant political and ethical systems, courses are available by the Quran Institute, which can be accessed via the link.